Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am your host, Matt, and also along with me, as always, is the amazing Dennis. I'm just going to give you amazing because I don't know how much you're paying attention at the moment. Just kidding. What's going on, man?
Oh, I'm sorry. You were talking to me? Yeah, hey, I'm amazing. How are you? I'm doing good, brother. Doing good. Oh, man. Here we are. Another fantastic night. So...
Yes.
I would ask how's your week been, but you know, hell, we've done three-hour conversation I think on Monday night. Then we did last night on the anniversary show. So yeah, I've talked to you every night. I talk to you more than I talk to my wife. Something's wrong
here. You
know
what? There's actually a lot of truth to that, I believe. So, hey, I think I ordered it today because it was everything lined up perfectly. But once the CD that I ordered, because I didn't want to download it because of quality reasons, so I ordered a CD on Amazon, and two of the tracks that are on it, I think are going to be a little bit of change up to our music lineup for our show openers. There's one song called Into Darkness, which that just fits. And there's another track that's on there called Spectrum.
Oh, all right.
So I saw that, and there's a remix of Sail by AWOL Nation.
Well, depending on what the remix is, I mean, I absolutely love that song, but they have a remix of it called, like, Full Beat Version or something. I forget what it is. It sucked. I wanted to, like, take Q-tips and drive them into my ears with a sledgehammer just to stop hearing that one. I'm going to throw a shameless plug out. I use Pandora all the time in my truck, and I have AWOL Nation Radio programmed into it, and one of the songs that they keep doing is this Full Beat Version or something. Why mutilate such a cool song?
Yeah, that's I'm not a big fan of the remix that's on the CD. Like I listen to it, and it's kind of original's way better. But just the fact that Into Darkness was one of the tracks, Spectrum was one of the tracks, and then our show opener being Sail was actually on there. I'm like, that's kind of like calling out saying, buy me. So
yeah, that definitely.
Just for the irony, I had to buy it.
Yeah, We still need to throw down, like, you know, some kind of a plug track or something. A welcome to an episode of, you know, something cool. We'll see if we can get somebody with a awesome voice. We'll see if we can get, you know, oh, I don't know, Scott Grunewald. We'll see if we'll get him to make one for us.
Yeah,
but,
that would be cool.
Hey, I do want to congratulate our good friends Daniel Hoven and Helmy Kramer. Daniel finally came out and admitted on Facebook, so it is now Facebook official, they are in a complicated relationship. I couldn't help but laugh my ass off. And of course, Helmy's going, you know, why would Facebook even give options like that with people like us on here? Just because
yeah.
It's fun.
I
saw that
on
top of my news feed, and I'm like, yeah, that's about right.
That's awesome. But yes, congrats to you guys. I'm glad you finally came out and admitted it.
And, of course, there was a whole string of comments related to it. You know, one of them says Facebook wants him to send a Starbucks gift card. And, of course, I hovered over Helmy's name, and the only thing it would give me an option for was either Starbucks, which I figured he's already caffeinated enough, or blowupfriends.com. So I'm not sure. I'm kind of in a quandary.
Well, and then if you go with the blow up friends, that's just a bad situation in itself, because that could hinder their personal relationship, depending on how if they're open.
Well, I mean, this is true. Now, the person right after me said that she was thinking something along the lines of more of a gift for the two of them, and she found a beautiful coconut shea butter hand cream. I thought that was perfectly appropriate. Needless to say, I damn near had tears rolling down my face reading through the comments. And I see five others showed up at my neighbor's. All right. So, yes, it has been a rather interesting day. Hey, on a bright note, I know I mentioned this quite a while back. I have a friend of mine that has, I guess now, for 6 months or so, he's been battling cancer. We have found out that the tumor has ceased to grow. Now they're hoping for it to shrink. So that's a step in the right direction. Congratulations, Mike. I damn sure hope you come out of this all right, brother. I've grown to have a very dear friend.
Yes, that's really awesome to hear.
At least there's a you know, bright note on this. And, of course, now with so many states that are now approving the, you know, same-sex marriage, you know, Daniel and Hope, Helmy, you know, just might work out for you, gentlemen.
So what else is going on? How's the, I can speak, I swear. Do you have anything going on investigation-wise coming up?
Well, I've got a private residence that we've spoken to. She's kind of on the fence about having us come in, and she's like, you know, I've seen the shows and everything, and I just want to make sure that, you know, whoever comes in isn't going to, you know, just rile them and piss them off and then leave us home. You know, I knew at some point these things would start becoming an issue for those of us that do it on a professional manner. You know, they see one program or another, and, you know, or they hear all these horror stories of, you know, jackass groups going in that, you know, they want to taunt and torment, and then they leave. Well, that leaves the homeowner to contend with it. So I'm trying to get her past that, to the understanding that, you know, we are a professional crew. I mean, this is not just a, you know, fly-by-night thing that we've gotten into and we're, oh, hey, that looks like it'd be kind of cool. So, you know, we'll see how it works out.
says she does understand that part of your team is law enforcement, correct?
Of course. She understands that the majority of my team is law enforcement.
Oh yeah. That's true. I guess you're pretty much the odd man out on that one.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, I have law enforcement ties. I mean, my father was law enforcement. But the other thing is, that's how we found out about this private location. It's an older lady that went in as a 911 service call for possible burglary. She heard footsteps up in her attic. She doesn't have an attic. She has a access above the second floor ceiling, but you can't walk up there. So needless to say, the officer responded, did a full search of the house, didn't look like there were any signs of forced entry. He didn't hear any footsteps in the, as she called it, the attic himself. But, you know, because I do have the law enforcement officers on my team, of course, you know, some of the other officers are aware of who they are and mentioned it to one of them. You know, it's, hey, you might want to get in touch with this lady. She's got, you know, she called in for somebody walking above her ceilings on the second floor. They'd have to be a dwarf. She's a...
No, I've heard about the door breaking.
You've heard about what?
I said I've heard about the dwarf break-ins in that area.
Yeah, it's all over the small town news.
it may be legit. I don't know. They can hide in very small places, so who knows? She may have a dwarf or a gnome that has staked claim in her upper access.
Yeah. You never know. But, yeah, we're trying to get that one straightened out and you know, just let her know that you know, we're a legitimate team. So we'll see what we get.
Yeah, there's,
and
there's
of course,
one that,
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, there's one that CPR Tracy actually contacted me about, saying that she was contacted and she's still kind of waiting because, again, it's somebody else who's on the fence. But it's somebody who knows Tracy. So... Or it's a friend of Tracy or something like that. I don't know 100% the actual full relationship, but I guess, yeah, some weird goings on. Summertime, and I don't know if it's the same around here or not, but summertime around here seems to be pretty quiet with private residents. I don't know if it's just people are out doing stuff and they don't notice as much because they're not inside at home like in the wintertime. I've just noticed over the past few years that it actually develops a pattern that way.
Well, it could be. You know, people aren't home as much. There's not as much excitement in the house. The energy is not as high. Perhaps that does have something to do with, you know, a decrease in activity. Who knows?
Or the spirits just hate the damn humidity also, and they head north up to Canada.
That could be.
Which,
I mean,
you know what? I was actually thinking about that today too. With what it is like recently, as far as the weather patterns and all that stuff, and all the severe thunderstorms. So I don't know, man. I mean, that's something kind of interesting. Of you know, maybe locations that we've gone that kind of have full access to that might want to just take a pop in and check out and see if there's anything different.
Yeah, well, I mean, my favorite location, I've been there on, you know, stormy nights and, you know, when you do have electric storms roll through, and I have noticed, I won't say more EVPs, but I've noticed they seem to be stronger and clearer. Now, whether that's got anything to do with, you know, static electricity in the air or what, I don't know. Maybe it's just the heavy humidity in the air and it's able to do it better. But I also remember seeing a, and I don't remember which program it was. Matter of fact, yes, I do. It was a Haunted Collector. They took a recorder, put it in a Ziploc bag, and submerged it in the bathtub and said that, you know, our voices will be kind of muffled, but because the way that we believe energies are able to do an EVP, you know, it should be much clearer. Well, I mean, they got a fantastic EVP out of it that was, you know, virtually crystal clear with no background noise, but their voices were muffled. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe there is something to it.
But if you're hearing an echo right now, that's because I'm Kim messaged me saying that we sound kind of like a Max Headroom from the 80s, like real spotty. So I'm just checking to see the feed and see how it is. But
yeah, I've noticed that before. If I use the speakers on the laptop, like normally I've just got my earbuds plugged in. So,
well,
that's
what I'm doing right now is I got the, I have the actual show link that everybody's hearing. I just want to test it, but I'm going to shut that down so we don't get the damn echo like we've
had.
Yeah,
feedback. Yeah,
yep.
Well, it could be storms too.
We got another line coming in here, so. But anyway, I do have to say, since both of them are in the call queue right now, I'm actually really, really excited. I know we've talked to Kim and Chris. I've talked to Karen before independently, but I've never actually spoken with them both at the same time directly. So I'm actually very, very happy to have them on. Absolutely amazing, amazing book, Secrets in the Shallows. Karen Vance Hammond and Kimberly Huddle Brule. And Kim, you got to tell me if I'm pronouncing your last name right, because I never know. But, yes, we do have, I've never heard you pronounce your last name. So, and I don't know if it's got the French thing or, you know, how to say it. So please fill me in on that in 1 second. So, but yeah, I'm really, really excited to talk to both of them at the same time, both authors of the same book. So I believe Karen and Kim, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, you're both there.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Awesome. Hello, how are you doing?
Doing all right.
Good. Doing good.
And it's like, it's brulette, like Russian roulette with a B in front of it.
See, that's, I didn't know if it was brulé or brulette or, okay.
Yeah,
now
I get that
one. Now I got it down right.
Yeah, I mean, if I say Russian roulette since with a B in front of it, everybody gets it from then on. They got it. Woo-hoo!
All right. Locked and loaded. It's in the head now, so.
Because there's more than enough room in there.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Karen.
I just want to say to you guys both, thank you so much for having us on the show and for contacting us. And I was so excited when I found out about this opportunity, you know, to have Secret in the Shallows featured with Kim. I mean, this is such a fantastic opportunity, so thank you so much.
Oh, it's for sure definitely our pleasure. I mean, you know, I've talked to Kim and Chris have been on before, and Karen, I know I've talked to you not on the show and stuff, but yeah, to have both of you guys together is absolutely awesome, because the book's phenomenal. It's taken off. I mean, you guys are marketing it great. I mean, and just everything, all the reviews that I see on it are amazing. So,
well, thank you so much. I mean, it has absolutely taken off. And, you know, one thing is that a lot of people who, you know, have read the book already and have reviewed the book, it's absolutely been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I never thought how much positive reception that we would have with this. And so, you know, I don't want it to ride on the coattails of shoe marks, okay? This is something completely different. And so I'm just very, very grateful. Very, very grateful.
Hey, speak for for yourself, Karen. I would like to say that I know how much work you put into this. And I know I have enough. I don't want to speak down, you know, I don't want to say down anything negative, but I want to know, I want everybody to know we really put a lot of effort into this. We put 14 months of our lives into this book.
We sure did.
Like,
absolutely.
Every single day we put, I know I was up until 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, spent entire weekends, you know, after working all day, and we managed 14 months of our time doing that on top of a full-time schedule and got this book done. And I am very proud of what we've done. You know, I'm not speaking arrogantly. I'm just very proud of the fact that we have accomplished this, and I feel good about this book. I'm very, very, very pleased with it. And Matt and Dennis, I do really appreciate you having us on the show. It's always a pleasure. I really do appreciate your support. I notice, you know, all the time you're liking our stuff, you're supporting us, and I really do appreciate that. So I just want you to let you know that.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. But, hey, for the listeners that don't know, I'm looking at Amazon.com right now. You can get wireless delivery free via Amazon WhisperNet. $4.88 for the Kindle price on Secrets in the Shallows, and it has 5 stars out of 5 on the reviews, so it's worth looking at.
We've actually had 19 five-star reviews, so just FYI. I mean, again, I'm not trying to toot our own horn. I'm just very excited. I'm very thankful for the response we've gotten about the book, and I'm looking forward to what we've got going. We have so much in store in book 2 and book 3. Karen and I have been planning this out, and I'm actually really excited about book 3. I'm, like, ready to get book 2 over so I can get to book 3. So.
Just remember, one step at a time, and it'll always work out.
I know. It's just I've got so much. We've got so much in our heads and everything. It's just, you know, we've been talking about it. And, you know, Karen, I know you're excited about it, too.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this first book in the series has captured not only the reader, but it has also enthralled TV personalities like Discovery Channel Bill Bean. I mean, he gave a raving 5-star review on it. Michael Rivers, another author, has given a raving 5-star review. And the reviews just keep coming in. And this book, you know, you can sit down and read a book, and a lot of people already know who did it, you know. But in this book, we are totally taking the reader off guard. And it has been a lot of fun doing that.
I love it. You get
well,
this book, and you aren't sure what you saw. So I'll just say that. You're really like.
Yeah. It has kind of a thing, almost like a setup, kind of like Clue, to where it is a complete whodunit.
It is.
And that's what was awesome is the twists and everything that are in the book there's no confusion. The flow is like perfect on it. I mean, I was extremely, extremely impressed.
So you have finished the book?
Not fully.
Where are you at? I mean, what? Not necessarily. Don't give the readers any but kind of give us an idea where you're at in the book. I'm just curious.
I can actually. I gotta bring up. I have it saved on my laptop, and my laptop is acting messed up right now. So let me get this unfrozen. I do have a question for you while I work on this. How did you guys actually hook up for the project?
Well, Karen, I'll let you answer that.
Well, okay, I sure will. Back when I was living in the state of Maine, I had the most horrific dream in my life. And this is the kind of dream that you wake up and you're so frightened. And I'm sure that most people have had those kind of dreams where you can feel the dew on the grass as you run, or, you know, just very, very vivid. Well, I had this horrible nightmare that stuck with me for years, a long, long time, and I just kept remembering it. Well, after I wrote the novel Shoe Marks, I decided to go ahead, and I thought, you know, this would make a really good story. I mean, I know it's a dream. It's just a dream. But it would make a fantastic novel. So what I did was I wrote the first draft, and I just wrapped it around that dream is what I did. Now, this is where Kim comes in. Kim is absolutely one of the most phenomenal women that I've ever met in my life. Extremely smart, very, very bright. And I had lost my editor on my novel Shoe Marks, which is a paranormal inspired by true events that took place in Texas, which also this past April won first place at the Paranormal Awards in Massachusetts. Now, my editor had other irons in the fire. She had her own television show and wanted to spend time with the grandkids, and so she was downscaling. Well, Kim contacted me on Facebook, and we started talking and became good friends and realized that we had a lot of things in common with each other. And then she told me, she said, I've edited over 25 books, and I would really be interested in talking to you. And I just about dropped the phone. And I said, what? You mean all this time we've been friends and you haven't told me? Well, I told her to, we exchanged telephone numbers, and she called me. And I said, I do have this manuscript written, and I would like for you to at least take a look at it and see if you're interested. Well, a couple of days later, she called me back, and she said, absolutely, absolutely. And so that's where the relationship in this project started. After a few weeks, after she had worked on it, she started to, hey, why don't, you know, let's kind of co-collaborate here on this story. You know, we can bring in more characters, we can do this. And that's not saying that the manuscript was bad. It wasn't. It was just that, you know, why don't we put more into this? This is a great story. We can have more than one book out of it. And so that's where the relationship began. And not only are Kim and I on a professional level, but we're also on a, you know, sometimes we just talk and just want to know about each other's day and share. We're both mothers. We both have kids. So, you know, working full-time jobs, we wear lots of hats. And so it's really been a fun, fun, fun ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've become very good friends. And, you know, I've never actually met Karen in person, but I feel like she's like a sister to me. And, we talk every day practically.
Every day, sometimes more than once.
Every day we talk because we're constantly talking about books. We're talking about what's going on. I mean, we might go one or two days here and there, but for the most part, I talk to her every day. And so, you know, it's awesome that she not only has this project brought us together as authors, but it's brought us together as friends. And
yes, it has.
So it's been a great partnership that we've developed in many ways.
Yeah. It finally came up. I'm at the card game. Without giving too much away. I don't know how much you want me to say.
Okay.
you said without giving too much away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the wood burning stove, card game.
The parents, right? I think the parents are having the card game. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, basically, one of the things that I think that I feel like our book has done that, I guess a lot of things in today's literature that have been lost have been many forms of the art of writing. People just get their story down they don't really think about it. They don't really focus on it. They don't necessarily spend a lot of time talking about the characters or trying to get the persona of the character out. And so you just stuck with this narrative of a story where you're just hearing from the outside in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And so in this, in working with Karen on this book, I felt like we could go from the inside out a little bit more. This is about a serial killer. One of the things, and, you know, I know that, you know, not everybody's watched Dexter, but I know it's a very popular show. One of the very good things about Dexter, who is a serial killer, is that part of the show is from his innermost thoughts. Have you ever watched Dexter?
I've watched it a couple times.
Okay. Well, part of it, he is thinking. You know, it's what's going on in this serial killer's mind. And so now you put that in a book. And you actually get in there and you get into the minds of the different characters that are in the book. Instead of just reading a story about the characters, you know what's going on inside the character's mind. You know what they're thinking. You know what they're feeling. You understand what they think. You understand what they know. You understand from their different points of view. So you might see one scene, but you see it possibly from two or three perspectives. And you only have that particular person's perspective at that particular moment. Does that you know, make sense?
Yeah.
So as you become the individual characters, as you're focused on that one particular mode, you're only given the insight of that particular character. And that, therefore, it's more realistic. You know, and you're able to see, you're able to understand the same story from multiple points of view. You know, I hope that helps that. You know, but I felt like this book has been able to do that. And that's one of the things I'm proud about, you know, proud of with regard to this, because we get into the mind, and we, of course, right now you don't really see it quite yet. And I can't explain why, but we don't quite see it yet. But later you will. We will get more into the mind of a serial killer. So,
you know, not only able have we been able to get into the mind and the perspective, but, you know, with my degree in psychology and sociology, I've also been able to use that and really hone in on that, where it not only, like Kim said, do you feel what the character is feeling, you get into their mind, but you also get a sense of why they're doing what they're doing. Because there is a storyline here. And later on, when you get further into the book, actually in book two, maybe book three, then you will actually see who did these heinous, heinous murders and why they did it and for what reason they did it. So, you know, there's been all different sides coming into this book. Like I said, not only the psychology part of it, but also getting into the mind of the characters. And that has really enthralled the reader, because we've had a lot of people say, this is totally different from what I've read in the past. This is different from any book that I've ever read. Because like Kim said, a lot of times you are just narrating. He said, she said, she's mad, he's mad. And don't just say he's mad, show it. And so that's one thing that that we've been able to captivate.
Yes.
Well, and there is a very, and you know, honestly, you're speaking to a fellow here, because that's what I went to school for too, was the psychology, and I focus more on the abnormal aspect of it, and sociology and the ties between the two. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's where, you know, in an author's, in a collaboration, like you guys did, that was actually really cool because it was consistent and it was two different perspectives that blended together like perfectly. And I know the one thing for everybody listening for a comparison, and I'm going to compare it to a movie, not the storyline, but just kind of the way that it plays out. If anybody's seen the movie with Johnny Depp, Secret Window,
yeah,
that's, you know, like I said, not a direct comparison, but, I mean, it's kind of one of those things that just, you know, keeps you guessing, keeps you wondering. It's very descriptive, and, like, it just flows perfectly.
Well,
so, congratulations. Also, congratulations fully on the 19 5 of 5s. That's absolutely awesome. You guys deserve it. You put a lot of work into it.
Well, thank you. I've always said, and I know Karen said it, heard me say it at least 50 times. You know, I don't want to put my name on anything that I'm not proud of. You know, I'm not going to put anything out that's second rate in any way that I can prevent. You know, and you know, I am actually proud of this, and for me to say that I'm proud of this, it means something to me. And for those that don't know me, it doesn't mean a thing, but for those that do know me, they should understand what I'm saying. So.
That's one thing that I really do like about Kim is that she is a perfectionist when it comes to this book. And, you know, to have it as perfect as it is, you know, working very meticulously, making sure that everything is right, you know, I feel the same way. I am not going to put my name on something that's going to be just, you know, halfway done. And so I really admire Kim for that, and that's one of the reasons why I really wanted her on this project and to co-collaborate, is because she is such a hard worker and doesn't do anything halfway. It's 100%. And so this book to us is 100%. And
it's,
so
it's 150%, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I was actually going to say, Karen, I was going to call you a damn liar, because in the time I've known Kim, she's puts 110% and is a perfectionist in everything that she does. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I know that it's terrible. Some people hate me. But, you know, I can't with a good conscience put out anything that I'm not happy with. You know, and that doesn't matter whether I'm doing a project for someone else or for myself. You know, I would rather tell it like it is and say, okay, this is what I think, you know, I feel like this needs to be corrected, or this is what we need to do. I'm just not very happy with this. And I'd rather do that and somebody be a little upset with me than not say it and then regret it, you know. So.
Yeah, I completely understand. Dennis, why are you so quiet over there, man?
I'm just sitting back absorbing, brother. You know how I do. I sit back, I absorb, and let it flow.
One of the things that, if I can interrupt here, one of the things that I was just thinking about is the actual prologue of the novel is so gripping, absolutely grips the reader and holds their attention until the end. And the prologue is just absolutely phenomenal.
Karen, would you be up reading that tonight? Is that
sure,
okay?
I can read it.
Is that okay
sure.
with you?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I can read it. If y'all can endure my voice for a minute, let me go ahead and get to the prologue. The prologue is something that, like I said, you know, I have a prologue in Shoemark's, but we also felt that there needed to be a prologue in Secret in the Shallows, and it's absolutely gripping here. Okay, let me go ahead and turn on my light.
And for just real quick, one thing that I've told Karen, and I work with a lot of authors that haven't had as many published works out. Just FYI, the prologue is probably the most, and the prologue and the epilogue are probably the most unused portions of the book that have the most potential. So take advantage of them. You know, just my little 2 cents.
This is the prologue to Secret in the Shallows. As you guys know, this is a murder mystery. It does have paranormal in it, and so here we go, the prologue. This fog blanketed the canopy of autumn trees arrayed in a myriad of yellow, oranges, and reds. From the distance, ghostly wails from a foghorn resounded throughout the valley. Its melancholy sound sliced through the silent evening air as its vibrations crept up on the lighthouse spiral staircase. In the lantern room at the top, the Fresnel stood sentinel, rotating endlessly and casting its beam of light out into the water. Anchored by the bay below, lobster boats gently rocked back and forth in the surf while the ominous storm clouds encroached upon them. A black crow landed on the shoulder of a marble statue of the Blessed Mother Mary, standing watch over the monastery lawn. Dangling from the sacred maternal hands, a long strand of rosary beads swung back and forth in the coming storm's deadly breeze. Loud calling emanated from the bird's black beak as it spread its wings and flapped them vigorously. The feathered hunter took only a moment to study its surroundings before flying away to find a safe haven from the storm. Rumblings of thunder filled the air as several streaks of lightning clashed with the ocean in the distance. Light winds began to swell and howl while passing by the beautiful arched monastery windows. Raindrops steadily tapped on the colored panes of glass, echoing throughout the corridors as the storm began its descent upon the campus. Suddenly, a loud booming noise erupted from the monastery door, was thrust open by a nun frantically fleeing from the entrance. Dressed in a dark burgundy habit, she ran down the front steps, flailing her arms and screaming, "No! Get away from me! Get away from me!" Only seconds behind, a taller nun in a black habit, clutching a short-handled battle axe with gloved hands while chasing after the escaping sister. The dark figure slipped on the wet grass while scurrying after the nun as she fled. Regaining her footing, the nun in black continued to pursue the fleeing gray as rain began to come down in torrents. The frantic one ran for her life into the woods as she screamed for help, disappearing into the wind like smoke on a winter gale. Her burgundy habit flared out behind her as she tried to escape. Evergreen branches slapped her face and scratched her arms as she tried to elude her pursuer. The nun's only goal was to find a safe place to hide. As the terrorized woman ran through the woods, low-lying branches caught her headpiece, exposing her long, beautiful blonde hair now being drenched with rainwater. Looking back through the blinding sheets of rain, she was lost in a sea of branches and tree trunks. Turning to run again, she immediately slammed into her stalker. Tears burst from her big blue eyes as she looked of absolute terror came upon her. "Please let me go. What do you want from me? What do you want from me?" The ghastly nun peered into her eyes with disgust and grabbed her arm so hard that she could feel the nail claws into her skin. Desperate to get away, the smaller nun tried to wrench her arm free, but could not escape from the dark nun's grasp. In a vile, hissing voice, the assailant ordered, "Get down on your knees." Panicking, the nun pleaded, "No, please don't do this. I am innocent. I have a family who loves me. I've done nothing to deserve this." falling to her knees with her palms pressed together in front of her. She begged, "Please, don't hurt me." The dark nun hissed mockingly, "Deserve." Without hesitation, a gloved hand brutally slapped to the nun's cheek. "Shut up, sister." Nun covered the side of her face as the nun fell. Her long blonde hair splayed into the wet ground. Frantically attempting to get up, the final thing the frightened nun saw was a sharpened battle axe blade swinging toward her. The complete look of panic was locked on her face as her head landed on the ground. Her wide open eyes blinked twice as her mouth voiced a silent protest. Her lifeless body slumped in her. Her lifeless
that?
Body.
Sorry.
Her. That's okay. Her lifeless body slumped in the mud and landed beside it. Deep red blood spilled out from her severed neck into rain puddles all around her. Deliberately, the murderer trudged through the mud to where the nun's habit hung loosely on the branch of a gnarled old tree. Lifting it up in the rain, the killer inspected the headpiece for any tears before shoving it into a large pocket. Still holding the bloodied axe, the murderer turned to look at the victim one last time, then slipped silently through the trees and faded into the shadows. Somewhere in the dark of night, restless eyes twitched erratically. Beneath their slumbering lids, an eerie moan slipped between the chapped lips of its confinement in the dreamer's mind. A rising wail of anguish rose to join a booming clap of thunder. Violently, the figure bolted from bed as a white flash of lightning drove the shadows from the room and momentarily blinded the one sleeping eyes. And that is the end of the prologue.
Yeah, I was actually scanning it, or reading along with you, because I have it up on my screen still. So, no, it's actually hearing you read it was phenomenal. That was definitely sucks you in. So, you don't have to say if you ever read that again out loud, "Oh, if you can deal with my voice." No, that was awesome.
Well, thank you. You know, that prologue has just really gripped readers, and they're like, "Oh, no, here's this nun. She's frantically running for her life, and she's being chased by an unidentifiable nun. We don't know who it is, and you don't know who it is, and the reader doesn't know who it is, but there's also another murder that happens after that." And of course, you read that.
Yeah. Sorry, I got a freeze on the screen right now. Dennis, interject a little bit. I got to try and figure out what the hell's going on with our board.
I was going to say, geez, let me guess. Once again, the board has decided to take a glitch because mine's been doing it too. But yeah, I mean, just the way that it was read and everything. That was fantastic. It was much better than hearing it from my froggy voice. Now, of course, the silence, none. I can probably get a little lower.
Probably just a little bit.
But,
you know,
just the inflection in your voice and the excitement that you put behind it, hopefully that sets the reader up for that same idea on how to read it instead of just blasé, blasé. Which, I don't know,
well,
I mean, when I try to read, or when I do read a book, I try to put myself in the mind of the writer, and I try to, you know, inject the voices and everything just like you did, so I'm able to actually put myself in the mind of the writer. Now, it's definitely not that easy, but it was a fantastic prologue. I've got, actually, on one of the links that we posted for here, Diana Hunter says, "Awesome prologue." So apparently she's listening. Thanks for joining us, Diana. So that gives you a great idea that we are being listened to. But it was fantastic.
Thank you. Another thing about the novel that has really captured the reader is the descriptions, because one thing that I do is that, and I know that Kim does this too, is I close my eyes when I write, and we write what we see, not just the visionary of it, but the actual steps that the person takes. And I feel like that's really important. And so, you know, when I write a piece and I send it back to Kim and she works on it and sends it back to me, you know, we both incorporate that feeling to draw that reader in. And I feel that that's really important. We want to make the reader feel like they are a part of the book. And I feel like that we have accomplished that goal.
I mean, from the reviews that I've read, I mean, just real quick, you did mention Bill Bean's review. I'll go ahead and read it just for those that don't know or haven't looked at it. Karen and Kimberly have written a winner. Secrets in the Shallows is a hard book to put down and will keep you on the edge of your seat page after page. Congratulations on a great book, ladies. And 5-star review. So that's one. I think the one that I liked best was R.K. Weigel, who's from the Astralis Chronicles.
Yeah.
The prologue grabbed my immediate attention, and from there on, I couldn't put the book down. This gripping murder mystery is a cleverly woven tapestry with all the right threads, ghosts, suspense, intrigue, romance, small-town characters that could have come straight out of a Norman Rockwell painting, and twists and turns that will keep you guessing and leave you wanting more. I absolutely cannot wait for book two, and you won't be able to either. So, I mean, just from those two, you know, it definitely leads you to, you know, it will be a book that, you know, I think it's going to be a very good seller for quite a while. And especially as more and more get to be exposed to it. And I definitely think you did great with it, ladies.
Well, thank you very much. And we should have the printed out. We're finishing up. I'm actually just this weekend, I finished up laying out the galleys for the printed edition of the book. So we should have, I'd say within a month or so, if not less, we should have the actual printed edition available. We have the ebook available on for both Amazon and also for Nook and also a few other formats. So we have those available right now, but the printed edition, I know some people have specifically said, I just am an old-fashioned reader. I like something in, you know, the palm of my hand, and, you know, that will be available hopefully by the end of July. So just want to let everybody know.
And one question I have is, especially, I love the cover art on it. I mean, it's who did your cover art?
Actually, I did it.
Oh, nice.
I've been a graphic designer for 22 years, and I do actually do freelance work. Just a little self promotion there.
there's nothing wrong with a shameless plug on us. I would believe it.
I've been in marketing and advertising production and publishing for 22 years. So I know that it dates me a little bit, but that's part of the reason for my perfectionism. If you mess up in my industry, it can cost you hundreds of dollars. So I don't mess up if I can help it.
And you just already answered my other question, is because on the copy that I have, which was sent to me, that it didn't show any publishing house or anything like that, so I didn't know if it was self-published or how you guys were running it.
The one I gave you was the review copy, but the actual Synergy Books is the name of the publishing house, and synergybooks.com, it's spelled with S-Y-N-E-R-G-E, books, instead of with a Y.
but that is our publishing company. So no, it's not self-published.
No, it is not self-published. That's one thing that, you know, when of course Shoemarks was also published by Synergy Books, and when I approached the publishing company to see if they would be interested in publishing another one of my novels. You know, of course, it's Kim and I together now, but at that point, before I met Kim, they were absolutely elated. They said, absolutely, hands down.
Well, and I'm going to flip it a little bit away from the book at this point, and as authors for... like from an author's perspective and for up-and-comers and stuff like that, what kind of advice would you give for somebody? And I always like to hear from amazing talent of advice to give to people that have the questions about what direction would you suggest as far as if you do have something that you want to get published or you want to do and starting out, like how, what advice do you have for that?
Well, first of all, if you don't mind me taking this one, Karen, the first thing I would do is that everybody is, you know, that's an author or that has written a book, I will say, okay? You are blind to your own, the flaws in your own work. Okay, and that's just a natural tendency. You don't necessarily see that you've been looking at this book, and it happens to me too. If you have been looking at a book for months on end, every day or every other day or whatever it is, you're not going to see the book from an outside perspective. You don't see the forest for the trees. And so you need to, when someone is, you get other people to read it, and you are willing to take their honest opinions. You don't get a bunch of fluff. You ask for their honest opinions. There's no point in asking for other people's opinions if all you're wanting is yay-sayers. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Because if you want to be successful in this business, the only way that you can be successful is if you improve upon yourself. If everybody just says how great you are, and not how you can improve yourself, then all you're doing is building on what you already know. But if you are willing to hear, now, in a respectful way, don't get me wrong, okay, in a respectful way, how you can improve your book, then that's how you improve your writing. If you understand what you need to do to work on, then you know what to do. If you don't understand what you need to know, then how can you learn? If everybody just tells you what you want to hear, or you don't listen to them if they say something, then you're not learning a thing. So
yeah,
that's
or
the
ask,
advice
ask
that I can give
to authors
out there. And I've been an editor for a very long time. I've been an editor for almost, you know, basically for 15 years. So that is the biggest, I would say, flaw in most authors' personalities as a whole that I can say is arrogance, is that everybody thinks the work is perfect, or not everybody, but a good portion of them. It's like, excuse me, sorry, I clogged my throat. Is that about 50% or more authors that are out there think that their book is really good the way it is. And they don't realize that sometimes they don't necessarily see the holes in their own manuscript. And they need to realize that when people are out there and they see those holes, they can fill those holes and they can make it a better book. You know, it's not taking away from their abilities, it's enhancing them. You know? It's like when you see a bridge, and if you saw a bunch of little holes in it, if you just left it there, it would eventually crack, right? But if you sit there and you repair those little areas, then you don't see any flaws anymore. You know, and it'll last longer, and it'll be stronger because you've reinforced it where it was weak. And authors need to take that same stance in their work.
You know, real quick, I do want to compliment you extremely on that analogy, because that analogy of what you just used with the bridge defines constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even, you know what, anybody who's going to, any criticism and anything in any sort of artistic field is positive.
Right.
One. Yeah, you know, and there's going to be some dumbass who buys the book, and they're going to read it, and they're going to read it kind of half-assed and not the way that it was intended, and they're going to have a problem with it. And you know what? It happens. It's kind of like listening to a song. Some people will absolutely love the song, the majority, but you're going to have one person. In a small scale, one person who doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give it to a group of 10 and 9 out of the 10 like it, but the one person bashes it, well, fine. You know what? It wasn't for them. The one thing that I have noticed with a lot of books that I've read over the years is the author will write for the author. The author will not write for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to write for the audience, but also not just do it for them. There's a balance that needs to be reached. And my uncle's an author, or actually a few of my uncles are authors. My cousins, all that stuff. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But everything when you're writing is psychologically driven. Which I think, Taryn, absolutely awesome. Like I couldn't see that there's a better team to match up with the psychology, sociology, and editing, and all that stuff. Like it's the whole damn pack. Like start your own company. Like, I mean, seriously, like you're a triple threat, quadruple threat.
Well,
so. Hey, that would be something I might invest in.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And, yeah.
Given the degrees that both ladies have, you know, you're right. There is a huge threat there, and with the combination, it's just incredible. Feel free to go ahead and toot your own horns. Kim, how many degrees do you have?
I have a Bachelor of Science in Geology and Earth Science, and I also have a Master of Arts in Biblical Studies.
Okay. And
I know I have a really weird combination.
Yeah, that's definitely a little...
And I have 22 perfect. Years in marketing and editing and publishing, so in advertising. So figure. And I don't work in anything I got my degree in.
I don't either.
Ironically, most people don't. And Karen, what were your degrees here?
Well, I have a BS degree, and I have a double major in psychology and sociology, and then I have a minor in religion.
So, I mean, it fits perfectly, but, you know, there's so much there in just various fields to combine, and especially in something like, you know, with both of you having degrees towards the religion area, you know, for monastery, I mean, come on. It's bound to lead to that path.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Karen.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, I actually had one other book that I did before this that I was actually on the cover. Most of the books that I have been involved in, I'm behind the scenes. But there was another book that I did with regard to Abraham. And we actually talked about the first 80 years of his life rather than the ones that are discussed in the Bible. So I actually did use a lot of my research. I did a lot of archaeological and historical studies in my degree, and I was able to utilize a lot of that research. I actually researched for an entire year for that book before we started writing. So I was able to actually use it for the first book, which is called Abram's Journey, Quest for the Man in the Stars, and I did it with Pamela Tolan. So that one is also available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well. But go ahead,
and Jared. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said go ahead and say what you were going to say, sorry.
It's really interesting that both of us have written another novel, and on how we came together to write this one. And that's one of the things that really interests me about Kim, is that not only is she a wonderful, fascinating person, a wonderful editor, but she's also written another book, just like I have. And so with the degrees that we have, we were able to incorporate Secret in the Shallows. But there's one thing that we both agreed on, is that we would not have anything offending. We would not have anything that would be distasteful. After all, Shoe Marks, a paranormal inspired by true events that took place in Texas, is on library shelves in middle and high school. And I want the same for Secret in the Shallows. So that's one thing that we both agreed, that we would not write anything that would be nasty or anything distasteful. And when we came together to write this novel, if a 14-year-old wants to pick it up and read it, they're not going to be offended.
Right.
And so I am, you know, that's one thing that I am very proud of, that because you do have authors out there that will put nasty, nasty language in it, and yet libraries across the nation will not even take it because of the blatant language. And that's one thing that we do not have in our novels. We are very clean writers.
And then the other thing is, you know, they're even in discussing some of the storylines, the other day, and this is, I'm not going to go into specifics because I don't want to give anything away, but when Karen and I were talking about book three, and basically book three is, I'm not going to give too much away, but basically book three is going to come full circle and going to go back to the original creation of the serial killer, if that makes sense. So it's going to have a lot of flashbacks. It's going to have a lot of things about the original murders, the way that this person became who they are. And so I was sitting there talking to her about this, and I was concerned, you know, because I had some ideas, but I didn't want us to go against our principles and how we portray those. And so I was asking her, are you okay with this? And she said, yeah, as long as we don't say anything that would be offensive. You know, we allude to things, but we don't actually get into the nitty-gritty details, per se. And I said, okay, we can do that. So we are making sure that we talk about those things. Karen and I sit there, and I mean, this is book three. We haven't even finished book two yet, and we're already planning book three and what we're going to do so that we can have all these consistent storylines to go through throughout, and that we're both happy with them, and that they're clean, and that they're family oriented. You know, I mean, yes, I would say it's a good PG level for sure. Sometimes PG-13. I mean, obviously, somebody getting their head chopped off is not necessarily something that, you know, you want a 6-year-old to see. But you know, at the same time, most kids today see that in their video games. So, you know, I'm not trying to take away from it, but you know, I don't want anything too grotesque. But I do want to come across with some suspense and everything as well. So.
Well, and it's nice that you created this kind of horror, murder, mystery, you know, kind of thing, but tastefully. And it's obviously you couldn't read it around a campfire because that would be a long fire. But just in general, like, you know, even if somebody went through and told the prologue, you know, story around a campfire, it's not going to be anything that's going to be bad or there. And correct, there is no profanity. There's no, you know, there's none of that. And it's still an awesome, wholesome, just Dragian story.
It does have some areas, though, in the book where it can get a little gruesome, but we are very clean about it. We do paint the picture. And so one of those is when another victim is found floating in the monastery pond, and how the I had it very descriptive there, and how the crow is jumping down upon the corpse eating flesh. That actually happens to people. And so we want to make it as real as possible without grossing somebody completely out. So, and of course, you know, the family finds, and we put that in the book, that the feeling of the father and how he feels and getting into his mind. And like I said, we don't want to get too grotesque, but we need to paint the picture, and I feel like that is what we have done here.
Well, there's a difference between painting the picture and, you know, getting into the every last detail and so
right.
forth. I mean, part of a good book, in my opinion, anyway, I mean, if I read a book versus watch the movie about the book, part of the reason I prefer the book 99% of the time is the fact that I can let my own imagination work in there also.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I'm not bound by the director and actor's play of what the book was.
Right.
And, I mean, a good part of the time, if you talk to just about any author and you see where, you know, there's been a movie done about their book, a good part of the time the author isn't 100% thrilled about the way it was portrayed, because that's not exactly what they had in mind, but production has to have their rights too.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I have a preference for book form anyway, so I can let my imagination play into it. So even though you kept it pretty clean as far as where the crow was down picking the flesh,
you know,
I can get a little
overboard
with it.
Yeah, painting the picture on that, I think that we did really well. So, you know, like Kim said, you don't want a six-year-old sitting down and reading it, but we did it in such a way to where we wanted to draw the viewer in. We wanted to draw the reader in. And so I think that we have accomplished that very well.
Oh, let me read one paragraph real quick, and this gives you an idea. It says, and this is just one simple paragraph. And ice had already formed on the edges of the pond as the freezing temperatures held onto their grasp throughout the winter night. Like a sheer veil, a light fog had settled over the monastery pond, only allowing a hint of the early light to be seen. The peacefulness of the morning gave no evidence of the storm that had raged only an hour before. An eerie silence hung over the forest as the bubbles began to trickle to the surface of the monastery pond. Timmy's lifeless body rose from the depths and floated face down, turning lazy circles in the icy cold water. So that's one paragraph.
And that gives you a decent idea of how it's written and so forth. Now, let me ask you this. I do have a question. Are there any, and I guess simply because what the majority of our shows end up being about and how Matt and I came together being based on the paranormal, and are there any paranormal are there any paranormal activities in your own lives that have played into this book to kind of lead a portion of it?
You want to answer that, Karen, or you want me to answer that?
Yeah, well, I think that we both need to take this question.
Well, go ahead,
start. I say yes, because as you read the paranormal parts in there, not only am I a paranormal investigator, a paranormal author, but I also lived in a home that had paranormal activity in it. And so when the first draft was written, I definitely wanted to take that experiences that I had. And of course, I did not write my experiences in Secret in the Shallows. But having that knowledge and experiencing what I experienced, I was able to bring out a lot of the paranormal that is in the monastery. And, of course, you will read that later, because you have to understand there's not just one person that's dead here. I mean, there are several people that have been murdered, and they scream out for vengeance inside the monastery. And so I was able to take that, like I said, the things that I've experienced, and, you know, why don't we do this, why don't we do that, and so I did incorporate. Kim?
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, now, a lot of those parts that hadn't in the first book, I'll say in the first book, because the second book is going to change a lot from what we had. There's going to be a lot of new things in the second book that were not in the original storyline, so I don't want to say that. But in the first book, Karen had already written a good segment. You know, basically, she had written a first draft of the entire manuscript, and in working with her on that, I realized that this really needed to be told, and her book needed to be split in half, because we got to we weren't quite finished with three quarters of the book, and we were at 135,000 words, and I was like, I think we need to split this thing in half. 135,000 words is a lot of pages.
Like 900 pages.
Yeah. So
oh,
I was
Lord.
Like, yeah, so basically I was like, we need to, first of all, I think we can, if we were to split this in half, at least, if we can find the right place to split it in half, then I think we can actually enhance this a little bit more, get more deep into the characters. I like the term, I know this is kind of a weird term, but Karen liked it last time, was making the meatloaf. Okay, you know how when you make meatloaf, you got to put your hands in the meatloaf. And you got to get them all gross and gunky, right? And it's disgusting. And so you have all this stuff, and you put all the spices and everything in there, and you have to mix it up in order to make it work. Well, it's the same thing with a book. You have all these different parts, and you might have, like, what she gave me was the ground beef, okay? And so when she gave me the ground beef, I was like, well, I need this, but I really don't need this. And let's take these onions, and let's take these spices, and let's take these other things, and let's put them all together and mix them all up, okay? And then I realized that we had this really, really big meatloaf. It can make really two big meatloaves. So we split it in half again. And so now we have this really great book. But the thing is, going back to your question, is that in that core part and the beginning in this first book, she had already incorporated a couple of segments in that. Now, where I came in this, and I felt like the mood needed to be incorporated that was more paranormal and more eerie, was the idea of the dreamlike state. In the prologue, I wanted her to, when we were writing it, I said, I want the prologues of these books to be more like a dreamlike state. And then prior to every single part, you know, the book is broken up into multiple parts. And I wanted that the chapter before every single part to be this same dreamlike state. And what I mean by that is that whether it be a paranormal activity or there be something that seems like it's more of a dream or something like that to be incorporated. And, you know, a lot of that I have gotten from my personal experiences. Now, I've been a paranormal investigator for a number of years now. Chris, who's my soulmate and been with for 5 years now, has, you know, been haunted since he was five. And we've got our own paranormal group and our own web show with regard to that. That's What Lies Beyond. You know, I've already been on y'all's show before with that, with Chris. And through those experiences, you know, you get a good feel for what the paranormal is. You know, you're not the movie version of it. You know, you have the real version. So, you know, I think that has helped in creating that feel. You know, that I wanted, that dreamlike state. So I know that it was a roundabout way of saying it, but that's where I think that it came in.
Well, so, and that's a lot of, too. Sorry, Dennis, you're on a roll. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to ask, you know, if it was enough activity that, you know, you felt, I mean, that you dealt with, like, let's see, Karen answered first, and you felt that, you know, you lived in a house that had activity. What activity occurred that you felt you could bring into this?
One of the things, that's a very good question, a very hard question as well, then I'll try to answer it to the best of my ability. I believe that it is the feeling that I had when I did live in a home that did have activity in it, the feeling that my husband had, the feeling that my daughter had. And so I was able to incorporate that and bring out those inner feelings of what it's like to see something move across the room or what it's like to have an actual ghost talk to you. And so I was able to dig deep inside of myself and bring that out with the characters that are actually in the monastery. So I hope I answered that to the best of my ability, but that's how I feel.
Okay, so you know, the house that you lived in, you had things moving and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The house that we lived in that did have paranormal activity was in Northeast Texas, and so we are no longer there, but we will carry that with us for the rest of our lives, I can guarantee you that. And the house that we did live in has been sold repeatedly. A lot of people don't stay there very long, and I definitely know why. So, you know.
Yeah, I can vouch for the same thing. The house that I grew up in as a kid, we heard, you know, it was constantly footsteps and,
mm-hmm.
Rumor. Now, of course, I was, I think, third grade when we moved out. But I was old enough to know that there's an attic door at the foot of my bed. It's the middle of the night, and nobody should be in the attic. I should not hear them walking up or down these damn steps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even a third grader understands that an empty attic shouldn't have footsteps.
Right.
But rumor that as I grew older, I found out that rumor had it that there were, back in the mid to latter 60s, there were two homosexual men that lived in the house, and because of all of the bullying and so forth, they killed themselves up in the attic.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, my father was a diehard non-believer. This is BS. There's nobody in the attic. Well, explain to me who the hell's walking up and down the steps.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my brother and I slept in bunk beds. My aunt and uncle had five kids, and they had decided to move from the town that they lived in to the town that we lived in because there was a new factory opening up, and they wanted to get jobs there and try to you know, better the family. So they moved in with us for a while. So my brother and I had bunk beds that I had the top bunk, and the foot of the bed was at that attic door. So, you know, both of us would hear it. He was 4 years older than me. So
wow.
It was definitely kind of freaky. I mean, there were nights that I would, you know, get in bed with my brother because we would hear the handle jiggle on the attic door. And I don't want to be sitting here by myself. You know, I mean, it was freaky for a small child.
Right.
Well, you know.
So, yeah, those are things that, like you said, they will be with you forever.
Well, you know, Chris, you know, who is my fiancé, he was haunted since he was five. And so when we moved in together 4 years ago, I guess, we started having paranormal activity from about 6 weeks in. You know, once we moved in the apartment and they figured out where he was, it was on, you know. And so, you know, it was an almost, and sometimes it was multiple, you know, times a day, we would see anomalies. We had black anomalies form in the middle of the room. We had white ones form in the middle of the room, both through the ceiling. We would have shadow people. We had a stuffed animal that moved when we weren't there. And so we had a stuffed animal that, and this is one of the things that kind of started it all, was we had this stuffed animal that my daughter kept saying would move. And she, you know, I thought, yeah, right. You know, I was in the paranormal before that, but, you know, I didn't really have as much exposure to it. And she said, no, really, really, I'll be gone and it'll be like totally different place. And so, you know, we put it there. I said, okay, well, let's go somewhere. Let's put it somewhere and we'll come back and see what happens. And it would be moved. And then we did this for 2.5 weeks. And this stuffed animal, we would sometimes have facing one way, and then it would be turned all the way around. Sometimes it would be on one piece of furniture, we'd come back and it was on another. Sometimes it was in a totally different room. I mean, it was pretty wild, you know. And it got to, there was one time where it was practically dragged off the bed. So that's a totally different story. You know, that was probably one of the scariest experiences of my life. It was literally one of the paranormal activity experiences. You know, and if you want to read about it, you can go to my blog at whatliesbeyondforyou.blogspot.com, and you can read about "You're Pulling My Leg, Mr. Mean."
So, hey, if I can interject real quick, Diana, who I know she's extremely, extremely sweet woman. She's just talk to her. She's absolutely phenomenal. She's extremely intelligent. She's amazing, amazing at her work. The one who's been talking on the post that Dennis read the one about earlier. So, thank you, Diana, for the compliment. And it may sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but it's coming from her. And love you, dear. We need to get sushi again soon. She wrote, Matt, such an excellent points on writing, psychology, the quote-unquote audience, the creation of any book. My apologies for all my comments on here. I'm so excited. If there is any way to go into a separate chat while we're on the show, please let me know. CPR Dennis, you just said exactly how I feel about reading a book. The author's... The author's words inspire my own thoughts, filling in the canvas, making each story unique to me. Ladies, you are a true class act. Your presentation is done with intent, intelligence, and enthusiasm. What a show. I want to hear more, and I'm watching the minutes remaining with dread. So.
Aww.
Yeah. Thank you. Diana. She's such a sweetheart. Like, seriously, she's such a sweetheart and phenomenal. And with her busy schedule, Diana, thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to the show. I know, especially summertime with what she does for a living, she's extremely, extremely busy.
What does Diana do for a living? I'm curious.
She wears many, many hats along the same lines as you. I mean, she does stuff with fashion. She has stuff with advertising. She has stuff with last was real estate. And it's all at once. It's not like she just skips around the professions and all that. I mean, her resume will blow your mind.
We appreciate her feedback very much.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to toot her horn real quick. On Monday, she posted, hey, guess what? I'll be appearing in yet another medical book. That would be my second neurological book that will feature me and my awesomely odd WTF moments, MS neurological blood vein conditions. So, obviously, this is definitely a woman with high intellect.
Wow.
So congratulations on your second book, Diana.
Awesome. Congratulations.
And for you ladies, definitely has been incredible so far. And I cannot wait to find out about the next book in the series. Now I'm going to kind of move away from this book for a moment. And I'm going to ask this one of Karen. In reading some of your bio and so forth, it tells me about the reading disabilities and everything that you had as a child. Has that had anything to do with determination to make this an easier read, or how did that play in? Explain some of the reading difficulties that you did have as a child so the readers or the listeners that don't know understand
okay.
why I'm asking this.
Sure. When I was around, I don't want to tell the story too long, but when I was around 10 or 11 years old, I could not read. I could not even get through a Cat in the Hat book. And my parents knew that something was not right. I mean, I was failing the first grade, the second grade. They wanted to hold me back. I was not developed like a normal first and second grader and third grader should be. And I was writing backwards. Of course, I hardly could even write. And I was spelling backwards, which I could hardly even spell. But an average third grader, which is around 10, 11 years old, they should be able to get in. They should be able to get through a Dick and Jane book, which is what we had back then. And so I could not do that. They had me tested. And at first, they found out that I do have a learning disability. They had me even more tested, found out that I had a reading disability. But not only that, did I have to deal with those two whammies, but I was also highly dyslexic. Now, what does that mean? That means that I write backwards, and sometimes I will say things backwards still as an adult. So I could not go into regular classes. I wanted to go into regular classes and be with regular kids, the smart kids is what people would say. But I couldn't. So I had to go to a special school, which is called Barrett Elementary School, which actually had a reading center. And I will never forget Julie Jones bending down on one knee and looking me in the eye and say, Karen, everything's going to be okay. I'm going to teach you how to read. I know that you don't know now, but you will learn. I stayed in that special education classes until I went to middle school. Once again, I wanted to go into regular classes, but I couldn't. I just wasn't smart enough. They wanted to hold me back in the fifth grade and sixth grade because I was so slow. But I had to once again be placed in special education. When I went into high school, I was in special education as well. I could not go into regular classes. I was not smart enough. I could not do the work. Absolutely could not do it. I wanted to go to college, and my father, who had seen me fall flat on my face so many times and seen me fail so many times,
said, Karen, I just don't think that you're going to be able to go to school. So I wanted to go into the military, and, of course, they rejected me. And I couldn't even pass the test. I mean, I bombed it. And then I wanted to go into nursing, and, of course, I failed that, too. So here I am. But because of my dyslexia, because of my reading disability, because of my learning disability, having all three of these thrust at me that I'm having to deal with, not succeeding, not excelling like a normal child. My father said, you're just not college material. And I said, yes, I am, and I want to go. I have got to be a I have to try, because if I don't try, the answer is always going to be no. No, no, no. They did find a college that I had to go and interview, and it was called University of Ozarks in Parksville, Arkansas. They had what was called a learning center, and this center is just for people who have learning disabilities, anywhere from dysgraphia all the way to dyslexia. I almost did not get in. My scores were so low. But they took me on a probationary level, and they taught me the skills that I needed to learn and to be successful. Now, I needed to tell that preface to understand how this plays into my writing. When I first, and of course, I don't want to get into Shoemarks too much because this really isn't about Shoemarks, but it's about Secret in the Shallows. And I had heard about this story about a paranormal woman who had lived in a home for over 25 years, and she told me her story. And I thought, what an intriguing novel this would be. And I thought, Karen, you are absolutely stupid. You cannot do this. You cannot. But it was just lingering in my mind. And I thought, well, if I don't, then the answer is always going to be no. And of course I wrote backwards. And of course I had some of the scene backwards. And this sentence should have gone here. This sentence should have gone there. But in the end, with the editor that I had and the tenacity that I had, there was one time where I threw that manuscript up in the air and said, I can't do this. I failed in so many areas. But when the manuscript was finally written, when I finally had it as perfect as I could get it, that is when I sent it on to different publishing companies, and hoping that it would be published. And, of course, you know, one thing about, you asked about one thing about writing, and a couple of questions before is one thing that I could advise is, number one, get ready for rejection because it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, yes, and I was very low. But it finally was published, and I was able to go on. Now, here comes Kim. Absolutely wonderful. And I asked her, I said, have you ever worked with anybody who has a learning disability and dyslexia? And she said, no. I said, well, let me tell you, I'm going to give you a run for your money. And so, you know, she, how that has affected my writing, when I sit down to write a segment, I have to go slow. One of the best birthday presents that I have ever given to myself was last year, and I bought the dragon. I saw the commercials on it, and I told my husband, I said, I want that for myself. I can write my novels without anything being backwards, without any sentence structures being backwards. I can just sit down and speak the words and then have it typed for me. Well, that's exactly what I did with Secret in the Shallows. When Kim would see something and a segment needed to be written, I would put my little earbuds in, and I would just start speaking away. And, of course, I do it with my eyes closed. But has the challenge of having a learning disability and a reading disability and dyslexia, has it been challenging to write novels? You absolutely better believe your bottom dollar it has. But you know what? I keep going, and I keep plugging along. And one reason why I do that is because I love it so much. I love the creativity and getting inside of the characters, because we're the boss here, and I can do whatever the characters, you know, I can make the characters do what I want them to do. I never thought anything about writing, never even attempted it until I sat down and wrote my first novel. When I started writing, even though some things were backwards, even though some things were out of place, I absolutely became in love, absolutely in love. And every interview that I've given, because I've given over 50 with Schumarks, is that if it wasn't for my teachers, and if it wasn't for Barrett Elementary, and for my special education teachers, and for University of the Ozarks teaching me what I need to know, I would not be here today talking to you. Even with the Paranormal Award that I won, I called teachers who were still on this earth, and I thanked them. I said, I want you to see what you did. What you did, because I wouldn't be holding this award if it wasn't for you. Has it been hard? You better believe it. And one thing, too, that is really important is that learning disabilities never go away. And learning dyslexia never goes away. And I've had so many people will email me and message me on Facebook that say, you know, my daughter picked her book up in the library, or I read Secret in the Shallows, or whatever, and my child has this problem. What can you advise my child, or how can you guide my child? And one of the things that I will tell parents, because I do get a lot of letters, is that if your child has a dream, just like I did, if your child has a dream, don't squash it and tell them that they can't do it, because they can. There are tools out there, and thank God for the Dragon and for other electronic devices that are coming our way to help people that do have learning disabilities and dyslexia.
You know, and that's – and focusing on the I kind of bit the tip of my tongue when I was saying that. Dyslexia, what –
Are you having dyslexia of the mouth?
Apparently I do. And normally I have no problem saying it, but for some reason right now it's hitting me. Dyslexia. There we go, I sounded out. I was actually working with somebody who had it, and I wrote out three different sentences. And I know why I got kind of screwed up on that, because the last sentence that I wrote out was, I do not have dyslexia.
Uh-huh.
And of the three sentences, the person with dyslexia could not read the first two sentences, but read the first one fine. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. And trying to help somebody with it. But after that, they never had a problem like I just did saying dyslexia. Ah, I just did it again. Dyslexia. God, what just happened to me? And that was from a psychology standpoint. But no, in general, I can completely understand, and how hard it would be to actually be an author and as accomplished in life as both of you are. But then you throw in that one little thing. It's more power to you. Seriously. I just, hands down, I've been impressed with both of you women for a long, long time. As far as what you've done, the way that you operate, everything, like it's absolutely awesome to me, and I love seeing it.
Well, thank you.
I second that motion. I'm very proud of Karen and everything that she's done. She, you know, like we said at the beginning, she's become my friend. But you know, one of the things initially she asked me. You know, she said she asked me if I had ever worked with someone with this, you know, with disability with regard to dyslexia and everything. And no, I had not. You know, I had not worked with an author that was known to have that. But, you know,
There, and I won't say that there weren't some challenges at the beginning as far as, you know, before she got her dragon and everything, but I saw the spark inside of Karen, and I saw, and I read what she had, but I knew that what she had merit to it, that she had substance to it, and that she had substance to herself and her character, and I knew that she was made of something that was beyond who she were, you know, she was given a certain deck of cards. You know, she was given a certain hand, but she made the best possible hand out of that hand that she possibly could. And I think that she has done a phenomenal job, and I'm very proud of her in that regard.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I definitely am too. Also, hey, real quick, we got just a little over 14 minutes left, and I want to make sure that we get this out. And Cam or Karen, whoever wants to go first, whatever plugs you want to throw out. I do want to throw one out and say congratulations to Chris on all the work that you're getting. Awesome job, man, for sure. Supporting you, anything you got going on. But after now, anything that you guys want to put out.
Appreciate that. Karen, you want to go ahead?
I sure do. One of the things that I do want to do before I give you the plugs is I would like to read just real quick, and I'm not going to take very long. I would like to go ahead, and if it's okay with Kim, is to read what would be on the back of the book, and I feel like that's important.
Yeah.
So let me go ahead and pull this up. This is the book description. A deadly storm is brewing over the sleepy little town of Wattsville, Maine. Mystery and intrigue creep into the village like a fetid fog blown by an ill wind. The untimely deaths of two young men shake the quiet peace of the small community and threaten to destroy the life of a reverend religious leader. The spirits of those slain cry out for justice from their graves, while restless ghosts walk the hallways and grounds of the old monastery, silent victims of the horrors that took place by the pond. Faith, forensics, and falsehood mix together to mix this plot of this elaborate murder mystery. John Smith, the ambitious district attorney, along with his fiancée, Katie Warsaw, team up with forensic pathologist Dr. Peter Bakken and Sheriff Carl Johnson as they seek to solve the shocking murders. The twists and turns, twists and turns of the case will lead the team into the darkest heart of evil and in the mind of a serial killer. Where you can find Secret in the Shallows, of course, all you have to do is look on Amazon. Secret in the Shallows is right there. You can go ahead and read the reviews. You can also contact us on Facebook. I am under Karen Vance Hammond. Of course, I use my full name, which is my real name, of course. I don't use a pseudonym. But you can also plug in KarenVanceHammond.com. I am certainly there. And, of course, if you just Google my name, Karen Vance Hammond, it is there as well.
As far as, you can also find the book on Barnes & Noble. It's available for Nook as well. And you can also find it at SynergyBooks.com. And we also have a page on Goodreads for both of us, as well as I have an author page and a blog on Goodreads. And so feel free to go in. I do want to mention right now that we have our book is listed as we are in a poll right now for the book of the month under the Make Connections group under Goodreads. And as of a couple hours ago, we were just like one or two votes behind the lead. So we are like neck and neck. And I would love to blow this thing out of the park. And we've got till, I think, Friday to do this. So if anybody has any questions as to vote, please contact us. I hate to say it, but it is a little bit
of a hassle. I'll tell you that up front. It is a little bit of a pain, but I do appreciate everyone, every single one of the votes that people have given to us. We do appreciate that, and we are going to take two of the names of those that have voted and two free ebooks. And if they've already purchased, we're going to be able to gift. So that's one of the things we're doing. So that's Reads. And if you go to my blog, there is the link to the actual poll on the Goodreads blog. So you can also find me on Facebook. Now, my last name is a little long. It's BROULLETTE. And you can also find me as well. I also have the show What Lies Beyond with my fiance Chris Matheny, and it's What Lies Beyond, the number 4, the letter U, .blogspot.com, and then we also have What Lies Beyond for You under YouTube. So we have a few places you can find us.
If you want, also people can look, you know, just like Kim said, you can also look on our Facebook pages, and we have simple written instructions on how to vote. I have been checking this thing every 2 or 3 hours, and I'm just like heart pounding, you know, neck and neck. And so, anyway, the instructions are there. If you want to go vote, I would really appreciate it. That would really be awesome.
You have to be a Goodreads member, and then you have to join the Make Connections group, and then you can vote. So there's like a 3-step process if you do not have a Goodreads account. But the thing that's just really nice with Goodreads is when you get in there, you can actually find other people that like similar books and that recommend some books that you might like that you may never have heard of. There's reviews in there. There's synopsis. There's all sorts of things. And you can actually join groups that are specifically geared towards your particular genres that you enjoy reading. So that's, you know, there are some benefits for getting in there.
Yes, and Goodreads, I also do have on the CPR map page, I did post it earlier about how to vote and where to vote with the link and everything. So go to the CPR map page, it's there. I will repost it again, just because there's been a lot of stuff that's been posted on my page, and I want it on the top.
Well, thank you very much.
That is so sweet. Thank you.
Oh, no, definitely, definitely welcome. I tried to vote twice, and it didn't let me.
No, they kind of frowned on that. You know, technically, I could have voted twice because I had one for my professional thing, but I just did not. I honestly did not do it. I was not going to cheat, because I have a Goodreads for my publishing company. I have my Goodreads for my personal. So I was like, no, I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to cheat.
Well, I don't know about you, Matt, but I have definitely enjoyed the full interview. Just getting to listen to some of the trials and tribulations of everything that they've had to go through to actually make this book come together, and, you know, what it takes to actually do a book. I wrote a poem once. That was about the best I got. So it's fantastic that this thing has done so well for you both. Congratulations, most definitely. It's a fantastic book.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
We do really appreciate you having us on here. I know that Matt and Dennis, you've been both have been great supporters for me and Chris. And also, just FYI, for those that you were saying about Chris real quick, he was cast in a movie. I don't know if you heard about that, but he was cast in a movie, Goddess of War, as Lieutenant, I think it's Jackson. So
that is wonderful.
Major supporting role in that, so I'm really proud of him for that. But
hey, I have two things in closing before we go into archive. Diana just posted to me. She said, "Thanks for mentioning me. That was a surprise. You forgot the my main work is with authors and musicians. I promote, edit, and my own words were first published when I was 8. When I worked FT, I think she abbreviated. I'm not sure what she's getting. Yes, full time. At an ad agency, my words were used for national campaigns. One day I hope to have my doctorates in rhetoric. Real quick, can you say if the ladies are on Twitter, I am on there and on Goodread. I will be voting for them ASAP.
Oh, so, that is so sweet.
You know what,
Diana? I would really like to have you as a Facebook friend. All you have to do is just Google, not Google, but go to Facebook and just put Karen Vance Hammond. I'm the one with the ugly mug.
Oh, Karen, you're not ugly.
Well, in this group, that's me.
That's not being positive about yourself. You need to stop that.
I'm the one with the curly hair.
But yes, we do appreciate that very much. Thank you, Diana. And I'm very appreciative of all of our followers and people that have supported us. We have so many people. You know, Laura and you know, Annie and all Ken and all these different people and Jamie, and you know, we have tons of people that are always, you know, encouraging us, along with you, Matt and Dennis and a bunch of others, and we just can't speak enough for those that do that, because that keeps us encouraged and everything. We have our bad days too, so we do appreciate that very much.
Oh yes.
Then you're definitely more than welcome. Also, and I want to invite both of you on a paranormal level, not just a regular author kind of fiction, semi-nonfiction level. I am, and Kim, I believe I talked to you about this before, but
mm-hmm.
both of you are completely, completely invited to join. I'm creating a book of every, like, of 20 people that can talk about whatever they want to talk about. And it's a collaboration book.
Sorry,
and
I have so many things that I could talk about.
Yeah. So whatever you want to contribute is, it's 10 plus or minus pages. Just, it depends. I don't want to make it too long, but I figured about 20 people, 10 pages, a 200-page book of a collaboration of all the great, great minds that work in the paranormal field. We all come together.
Wow. That would be cool.
No BS, no nothing, no, oh, well, I don't want to work with it because it's this person. Well, nobody knows who's working together.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll come together. The biggest thing is the royalty aspect, and I thought about that too. What's going to happen is we're going to take all the proceeds that go from the sales of the book. They're going to go to a treasurer, not to me, not to Dennis, not to Mark, not to anybody who's setting all this up. It's going to a treasurer. We're going to throw a Paracon and have everybody there. And then,
oh, wow.
Cool. That would be awesome.
So, yeah, so we'll have a huge event, a huge party for a weekend or something like that. So nobody's bickering over money, but I would love to have both of you involved with this if you want to.
Sure. I think it would be fun.
Count me in. Go ahead and send me the link.
Yeah. Feel free to talk to me more about it. Diana has, I do have a, I think Karen does too, but I don't use it as much, but I do have a, I have two Twitters actually. But the one for my author is called Write Right, like RiteRight for you, is my Write Right for you is the Twitter account for me. So that's one, and then I have my Research Institute as well, which is more my paranormal stuff. So Oh, by the way, really quick, in about a month, there for those that are near Aiken, South Carolina, I guess near it's close to the Greenville, South Carolina area. We are going to be. I'm going to be at the Dixieland Paranormal Paracon. There, I'm hoping. What I'm planning is the 28th and 29th, I believe. You can check on my Facebook link. I've got it down there somewhere, but I'll repost it. But we're going to be doing it the 28th, 29th. We're going to be doing an investigation. Me and Chris are going to be one of the speakers. And I hope to have the actual printed book by that paranormal conference. So that's the end of July, basically just about a month from now. So look for that. I know it's through, the tickets are like $45 a piece and it's through Eventbrite. There's going to be plenty of great people there. A lot of people in the paranormal field are going to be there, but me and Chris will be there too. So it'll be fun.
That's definitely cool.
Mhm.
I wish I lived closer.
Yeah. it's just terrible how miles get in the way sometimes. You know, me and Karen, you know that me and Karen have never actually met in person.
That's why I was asking how you guys hooked up, because I was pretty sure you guys didn't.
No. Yeah, we actually met through Facebook, and we have continued, our friendship, and we talk on the phone almost every day. Yeah.
One day I'm going to knock on her door.
I plan on it.
You know what? Dennis has a story about that one.
I was going to say, if you do that, you have to have, whoever answers the door, if it's not her, then you have to have whoever answers the door not tell them who is there, and have someone ready with a camera. I did it to Matt back in December. I showed up at his door. His dad answered the door, asked who I was, and I said, nobody, just please tell Matt someone's here to see him.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty dumbfounded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actually a photo.
You know, also Skype is what has been a wonderful thing, because Kim and I have been able to Skype a few times, and that has been really neat that we can see each other. It's like a table between us. So thank goodness for Skype and that wonderful technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank goodness for technology
to help
Karen write such a fantastic book, and the two of you did marvelous on it.
Well, thank you so much.
I will make one request, though. When book two comes out, Devil in the Details, you are coming back on our show, aren't you?
Of course.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
All right, I just
we
want to make
sure.
We
will be there.
And hopefully
we will be there.
We'll be back on. We'll probably,
hopefully
I'm
we
into
get first dibs.
Oh, okay. Well, we plan on, I'm guessing, now we're working on it right now, but I'm guessing that we will have it done before Christmas. That's my goal. So we will see, but hopefully well before Christmas. So.
All right, we'll bank on that.
Okay.
But now, I mean, I guess it's kind of strange, but how can I, well, I don't know if I can ask this without it being a spoiler. How do you plan on improving? We'll put it that way.
In book two or the other stories?
Well, book two is going to, I'm assuming book two will take up where book one stopped.
Yes. Right, right.
Now, not being an author, it leaves me scratching my head going, well, I can't very well continue with these characters in it because, you know, I killed them. It leaves me scratching my head going, what the hell do you do for a follow-up to such a good book and then be able to keep it going?
That's the whole beauty of this thing. It's one long story. It's one long thread of a story going through all three books. And so we've just figured out the right places to break it and break it up so that there's that, you know, I took my cues from Charles Dickens, who actually invented the cliffhanger. You know, he actually kept a book going for 2 years. It's called The Pickwick Papers. It was the best-selling book for 2 years straight. And he was a genius. He was the first one to do this. And he basically, when he talked to the publishers, he said, when you get to the, they're like, well, how are you going to keep them reading, you know, about this story? And he says, you get to the end of one chapter or one segment, and then you have some guy hanging off the edge of the cliff. You have somebody walking down to him, and you don't know whether he's a friend or a foe. And you have them come back for more. And that's what we are doing. You know, the story, we've already been talking, we've already been thinking about the story for over a year and a half, almost a year and a half now. And we have this continual thread that's going through the whole story. And when we get to the third book, it's actually going to come right back around, and a lot of things in book one that seem like they're so insignificant or that you're like, well, what? I don't know what that was in there for, but I'm sure it means something. Or, you know, it's something that seems like almost nothing in book one becomes something so significant in either book two or book three. And so these are little things that you don't see in book one that you will see later. And another thing is that in book two, the paranormal is going to become more significant. There were some things paranormal in book one, but book two, the spirits are going to get more involved in the actual, you know, I guess what's going on. They're going to try to set things right. So that's all I'm going to say.
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
With that cliffhanger left, which was a good cliffhanger, the one question I do have, Kim, I know your answer, but Karen, I don't know your answer. How much does your scholastic background impact your investigations?
Scholastic background? Investigations and paranormal, is that what you're asking me?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. I go back pretty far. When my daughter was only 2 years old, that is when we lived in a house that had paranormal activity in it. So she is now 14. So I've been involved in the paranormal since then. And, of course, I'm also a member of Houston Paranormal Research Team here in Houston, which is one of the main paranormal teams in Houston, very respected. So I've been in the field a pretty long time now.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering how your psychology or sociology actually impacts what you do as far as method and stuff like that.
As far as the psychology and the sociology that I have, and I'm not really understanding your question. Can you ask in a different way?
Yeah.
I'm not understanding that. You're breaking up on me.
He's getting at is, with your scholastic background and the degrees and everything, how did those play into the way that you conduct investigations and so forth? Is that what you're getting at, Matt?
Pretty much, and just what you use as far as, like, a client analysis. Like, when you're actually sitting down and you're talking to the person to figure out whether they're, like, have their own issues going on that are kind of feeding it, or not even feeding anything paranormal, just feeding their own psychoses of what they develop.
Oh,
one
so
of the things...
Asking,
go ahead.
I see exactly what he's asking. He wants to know, with your background and degrees, how does that play in towards when you meet with a client and try to determine whether there's actual activity going on or they're just batshit crazy?
Okay, now I understand. Okay, you're breaking up on me really, really bad. I guess I was in a bad part of the house. What I do when I go into homes and investigate, with the degrees that I have in psychology and sociology, is that I ask very point-blank questions, but I also ask questions, too, where the person living in the home has really got to think of the answer. And I'll give you an example. I went into a home not too long ago to where I absolutely felt nothing. Absolutely nothing was there. I think this client wanted total attention. And so I worded my questions so creatively to where she would answer the question, but then I would come back a few minutes later and I would totally take the question and turn it around and see what she said. And hopefully that I would get the same answer. A lot of times I didn't. So when I go into a home, a lot of times you do have to use reverse psychology, especially when talking to a spirit or a person. That is really the best answer that I can give. I'm so sorry you were breaking up on me, and I really couldn't understand you the very first time.
No, and that's fine. Like, because a lot of times when... Can you hear me, or am I still breaking up?
You're still breaking up just a little bit. Just talk a little bit louder.
What in the hell is going... You know what? Blog Talk, kiss my ass. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you great.
All right. So when it comes to it, I run in a team of three, not four, not five, not six, not seven. It's just three of us. If I have to outsource for a larger location, cool. I have trusted people that I will go in with them. They can go in their own section, and I know that they're solid. But
right.
Myself having a psychology background and sociology background, the one girl, Samantha, that works with us, she's a pharmacologist.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have somebody who's Mark, who I started the team with. He does tech, but he's phenomenal in reading people.
Right.
So... It's a triple threat with us when we go in. It's like, oh, well, you know, have you switched medications? Okay, yes. What was
mm-hmm.
it to? Samantha can jump in and say, yeah, you know what, these are the side effects. Are you really sure that you have paranormal activity going on, or
mm-hmm.
could it be hallucinations because of a different medication?
You are absolutely right on, because when I go into a home to investigate, I can read the person.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel. I mean, I can read it. Kim, you can attest to that.
Well,
so,
the person is the location.
Yeah.
You can sense it. You can sense a different feel. And sometimes you get in there and you can sense a certain mood to the whole place, or a heaviness or a spirit or something. And
absolutely.
That has nothing to do with that person. But sometimes when you go to a place and you this person and you talk to the person, you ask them the right questions, and depending on the person's answers or, you know, their details and things like that, that can give you a lot of cues as to whether or not they're on
absolutely.
The up and up.
Absolutely.
Plenty of people out there that just want attention, you know.
That's right.
You know, or they want that sort of notoriety of having a haunted
mm-hmm.
house. You know, there's plenty
mm-hmm.
of people that fake it, you know, but I've lived it, you know, so I know what a haunted house is like. I know what haunted activity is. I've been around how many investigations for umpteen number of years, and I know what it feels like to be in a house where there's spirits are, you know,
right.
Most of the time. And it's, you know, like, for instance, since I moved into this house is not haunted. You know, this house, we have had nothing, zilch activity. Whereas we were at the other place, we had almost every day for
right.
3 years, you know. And so it's been kind of weird. You know, it's like too quiet almost sometimes, you know. But, you know, it's not just the person, but it's also the actual location, you know.
Absolutely. Totally. Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I investigated a home not too long ago that was located not too far from here, and as soon as I walked into a certain room, I became sick to my stomach. I felt like the air was being drained from my lungs. I felt like I was very, very nauseated, and I had to get out of there. And I knew that there was paranormal activity in there. That is how sensitive I am. That is how sensitive Kim is. So we can walk into certain areas and absolutely feel it 100%. But then I can also walk into another room and feel absolutely nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Dennis would have a better response to that than me, because I'm not sensitive. I'm not clairvoyant. I'm not anything along those lines. Well,
yeah, I mean, anybody that has any ability at all, any sensitivity, I mean, you don't have to have abilities, but if you're, you know, the least bit sensitive to energies, you can tell the minute you walk in that front door.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear all their reports when you get the initial call. You can go, wow, they got some crazy shit going on. But the minute you walk in that front door, you're going, something's not right.
Yep, you want to run.
Yeah. Or you can get there and somebody has basically given you a bunch of bull, and you're like, I don't know what they're talking about. You know, there was actually...
Exactly.
Like, there's one site in North Carolina. It's called the Devil's Stomping Grounds. And I heard for years and years and years and years, you know, this was a site that had all this stuff happen and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we took our bike all the way up there, about an hour and a half away, and it was absolutely nothing. I mean, all these stories and for like 120 years of stories, we looked them up. And we got there and it was just absolutely nothing, you know, it's just... Yeah. So you can't rely on the stories. You have to investigate it for yourself. You have to talk to the people, and you have to weigh everything in its own accord. You know, you cannot assume anything.
That is absolutely right.
I do have to interrupt real quick and contradict that in a way, because I do have a theory of familiarity. And if you, like, for example, say you're at a bar, you're at a restaurant, something like that, and there's kind of like the creepy guy or the creepy girl who keeps, like, picking on you or poking at you, and you're, like, and asking you questions, you just really don't want to talk to them. If you know for a fact that you can't be seen or you don't have to have interaction with these people.
I guess I can make the point on that.
But after repetition, that's one thing I've noticed about locations is repetition.
Yeah.
Creates more evidence. And I've tested the theory, and it's 99.9% accurate. And it doesn't matter environmental, you know, issues, anything like that. Like, it, if it's storming, oh, it's so much better, like, because they can feed off it. No, I think that free will still exists after death.
Yeah. I could
see that. They choose to block you out or, you know, accept you as a familial, and then they'll, you know, tend to give a little more evidence. Now, but that doesn't explain the, and pardon me for this, ladies, that doesn't explain the asshole that constantly gives me the effer name in my location. So, I mean, from day one, every time, I've got one location that I go to. It's kind of like my training ground for my team. And I've got one room in this location. It's a commercial location. And every single time from day one, I have been called an effort. From day one. So that kind of takes away that, you know, repetition thing and the familiarity on it. But nobody else gets anything out of that room. I mean, I've had the rest of my team in there, and there have been nothing, not a single blip on a K2, not an EVP number one, nothing. But the minute I go into that room, I'm called an effort.
Wow.
That's because you kind of are.
Well, yeah, but Dan, you shouldn't be calling me out on it. I mean, now, and this is after, see, I've been to this location and actually done EVPs and investigations in that location 5 times. Weather doesn't have any variable in it. Nothing seems to have a variable other than the fact that if I'm the one that goes in, EVPs come out, and it's always referencing me and calling me an effort. But the rest of my team goes in, they get nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now, I do have some abilities. Matt has seen me do remote views and be spot on. I actually did one on air one night and kind of flabbergasted the guest. So I don't know if that has something to do with it, that he knows that I can sense him. I mean, what's your take on that? I don't care which one answers it.
What's our take on...
Do you think he targets me like that because I have some abilities?
I think I wouldn't be surprised, because Chris is actually... Chris has been... dealing with this since he was 5, okay? And he calls it like he's a light for them. He's been called a light. And if you're like that sort of thing, you know, if you are like a light to them, and they're going to come to you. So, you know, I think that they can choose whether or not they want to come to you or not. But the fact of the matter is that you still appear to them, whereas, you know, other people may not.
Yeah, but I know, like, when I first started realizing that, well, the first time that I read somebody, it freaked me the hell out. I mean, just flat out freaked me out to the point that halfway across the parking lot, I was shaking. And I actually called Tracy Ray, who I had just met that day. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what the hell I just did. But we need to talk. And I can hear, she was actually in the car with David. And I could hear him busting out in the background going, he figured it out, didn't he? And, okay, what the hell is he talking about? Well, we both knew today. You know, we sense that you have abilities and you just discovered them, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, now, that, you know, so, I don't know, but, I mean, it kind of it just freaks me out that there are locations that I go to that I can step into the room, not see a single thing, and EVPs come out very clear. Yet the rest of my team, if I don't go into that room, they get nothing. But when I called Tracy, Ray that night, she kind of gave me a little bit of an insight into shielding. And then I talked to Tracy Ann, and she told me how to shield, and she explained it just like that. She said, if you picture in the middle of darkness, all of a sudden there's this bright light, they are drawn to you. And shielding is how you kind of dim that light down. So maybe, maybe Chris and I have that in common where we are kind of that light that they're just drawn to.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is something that we have found consistent. And I don't have it as strong as Chris. I have noticed in the past 10 years I've had some abilities that I didn't have before, I will say, because a little over 10 years ago, I had a near-death experience. And when Chris was about 10 years old, he had a near-death experience. And from that point on, when he was born, he died. He was like born, pretty much almost stillborn. He was completely purple. And from that point on, you know, since he was five, he remembers spirits being in his life. And one of the questions I ask people that have that is whether or not they've had near-death experiences in their past. And if they have, most of the time, I'd say 95% of the time, they can say they have. So have you?
Well, Dennis, before you answer that, let's...
I know that's getting into a totally different topic, but
yeah.
No, Karen, do you have something going on in the background, or Kim, do you have something going on in the background?
No, I don't.
No.
Do either you hear like that?
I hear it, but it's not from my end.
Hmm.
Well,
you've been waking up. I will tell you this, you have been breaking up on me a lot. So I've moved to a different part of the house where I can hopefully hear better.
She might have been moving around. That's probably what it was.
What kind of sound do you think you've heard?
It was probably you moving around.
Okay.
No, Dennis, tell them the message you just sent me.
I just asked him, do you hear voices in the background?
I was actually hearing voices in the background. I say something.
I wondered if someone was talking. That's what I was telling Kim, that you're waking up and I'm hearing something and I'm not really understanding it. And then I moved to a different part of the house because I did hear some weird voices.
I did hear some voices, and I thought it was just jargon, you know, just some of the sounds.
There,
I'll have to go listen now.
There it is again.
Yeah, this I'll
just heard happening again.
Review.
Ooh.
I
heard
will
that.
Have to review this. Well, here's my problem.
Ooh.
I know I have two spirits in my house. If you think about an EVP recorder, digital recorder, it works the same way as a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on a cell phone. Matt, are you on a cell phone?
Yep.
Kim, are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm on Skype.
Okay. So we may be getting some electronic bleed through Skype, perhaps. How about yourself, Karen?
I'm on the phone.
On landline or cell phone? Are you on cell phone or
I'm on a cell
landline?
Phone. No,
okay,
I'm on a
so
cell phone.
So we may be getting some network interference. Okay, that was a definite male voice.
I hear it.
But if you think about it, these work
it
in
sounds like a whisper.
I just heard okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But think about it. Your cell phones work, well, actually all phones work in the same way as a recorder.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, now, like I said, I know I have two spirits in my house. Kim, do you have any idea how many are in yours?
I don't believe there's any in this house. I did have that experience at the apartment. We would be sitting there and be on a radio show, and we would have sometimes 2 to 3 spirits actually talking in the background. A child, a man, and a woman.
Now, I do remember the first time that we talked with you and Chris, you told us to listen in the background and you'll probably hear them.
Yeah. So,
and that was when you were getting ready to move.
That was back then. But I really have not experienced anything of significance here. So maybe they'll catch up with us eventually. We don't know. We will. Time will only tell.
But it was definitely weird. I actually told Matt to mute his phone. I thought he had something going in the background.
I did too. I actually thought somebody was. I thought somebody was talking, like whispering.
No, nope.
That's what I heard.
My TV's on mute. There's nobody here.
I'm in the bedroom by myself. So I'm by myself completely. There's no TV, no radio, anything going on, just the computer.
Me neither.
Well, let's try something. This might be a first. Ladies, bear with me. If there's somebody else that's in this conversation that wasn't part of the original conversation, can you please tell us your name?
Ooh. I heard something.
I did too. Like, seriously, nobody has a TV on, anything.
No.
Welcome to my world.
Dude, it's still talking. What the fuck are you talking about?
That's what I'm saying. Welcome to my world. Even when... what the hell was that?
There's,
oh, my God.
There,
I heard
there's
that.
There's something consistently talking.
Yeah.
You know, it's
You're
too
sure.
consistent,
no.
though. It's got to be network interference. It's
just
too damn consistent. Now,
I guess
if I could get an intelligent
response, back through.
Yeah, I mean, if I could get an intelligent response, then I would definitely have to question it. And
to me, honestly, to me, and I'm not playing on anything. It sounded like Maggie.
No, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like there's, it's consistent.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's do this. Everybody, just be completely quiet, and let's see if we hear anything. I just heard Maggie.
Oh, my
God.
That
was a yes.
I heard it, too. I heard it, too. Wow.
Okay.
Kim.
Yeah?
What the hell?
That is scary.
This is the creepiest fucking radio show I've ever been on, and it's awesome.
We've covered this tonight, haven't
realize.
We? We're talking about paranormal books.
Wait. Also, the amazing thing about it is it's an archive, so I can go back and listen to see if it's still there.
I was going to say, you realize it's going to archive. This is being logged into the network. It's being stored on the network.
Wow.
Drive.
Wow.
And for everybody, and all of us will, like, seriously, hands up, swear to God, not, or whatever you believe in, there is not a single person doing anything.
No, I'm sitting here
Nobody,
touching the computer.
Nope.
I am sitting
nope.
here. It is dark. There's no computer on except for, of course, it's on silent. There's no TV going. There's no noise. The kids are asleep. Nothing.
Yeah, my TV is off. Wife's playing on the iPad. It's on or on her phone. It's on mute. There's nothing here.
Hmm. Wow.
Those were voices.
That is weird.
Yeah. I can't. I have to admit, we've had it happen before, though, so it really doesn't surprise me. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't. It's not unusual, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
You know, we've had it happen
There it is again. Hold on. Quiet. Quiet again.
10-second count. What in the hell? And I'm going to ask it for a name.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to see if I can get an intelligent response.
Okay.
Give it 10 seconds after the question. All right. If you're on this, if you are talking with us, my name is Dennis. I have Matt, Kim, and Karen. Can you tell us your name? Can you tell us your name, please? Now it's going to be bashful.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wait.
I'm wondering if it's...
Let's do this. Let's have each individual person right now ask the exact same question of who it wants to. I heard Karen. Holy shit, did you just hear that?
Oh my gosh, yes. Yes, I did. Yes,
Karen.
I did.
Karen,
yes,
ask the exact same question. All of us are quiet. What do you mean, no? Not you. I just heard no.
Yeah, I heard it too.
I didn't
hear
everybody. It.
Everybody but Karen, hit mute. Karen, please ask it a question.
If you're here, what is your name? Tell us your name. We want to know. Tell us your name. Ooh, I heard something.
That was my computer.
Okay. Okay.
The only thing is, if you hit mute, the Dennis, right? That you have the spirits.
Right.
I have the board.
Oh, okay. You have the board, so it would still show. It would still show through yours.
Well, I have the board to actually mute everybody else's stuff. So, what we can do is sing aloud. We got 42 minutes, so we can sing aloud each person and have them go through and see if that comes through again. Because right now, it's not coming through. So what I can do is, knowing that...
I hear something in the background.
Does somebody have their speaker on, or is that just random
no,
feedback?
No, it sounds like voices. It sounds like faint, faint, faint voices, like whispering.
I'm pretty sure that that's feedback from the show, but the rest of the ones when I was talking and I heard Karen and then no.
Okay.
That's not the same noise.
Okay.
What the hell was that?
What was that?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
No, and by the way, for everybody who is going to listen to this in archive, because I promise you that this is going to be posted as a holy shit, let me know what you think. This is nothing staged. This is not a publicity stunt to be like, oh, listen, these two women have these abilities and they wrote a book and, oh, God, check this out. No, this is not bullshit. This is actually happening.
The hair on my arms is standing straight up.
What the fuck is that?
What was that noise?
Yeah, dude, seriously.
I think that was a deep male voice sounding like it said so.
Stop.
Whoa. I heard something while you were talking.
Yeah, and it wasn't me. That's why I told him to stop. What?
Wow.
What the hell?
Huh?
Dennis, get... Hold on.
Mute me, Matt.
What?
Mute me off the board. If it's my phone, we'll isolate it that way. I'll mute my phone.
It is not Dennis's phone. Kim, are you typing?
I was just now.
It's still there.
You can probably hear my breathing.
I can hear what?
You can probably hear my breathing.
That's not breathing. That's words.
Yeah, that was not breathing.
Okay.
All right, so Dennis is back in now. Kim, I'm gonna mute you.
Okay.
I'm gonna mute my phone.
No, Dennis, stay on.
All right. I'll stay on. Who's actually muted right now?
Kim is.
Okay. So if there's anybody that wants to say anything right now, it's a great time. You want to play games? Talk with us. Let us know who you are.
Well, hold on. What I'm going to do
now. Oh, whoa. I heard that.
What?
Sounded like a tapping. Let's do it again.
Go for it, Dennis.
All right. Well, I'm sitting perfectly still. I've got both my elbows on the table. I have my fingertips to my temples holding my head in place. So if you're in here with us, feel free to talk. We've listened to you for a while. Feel free to tell us your name. You can talk now. We give you the floor. Nothing.
No.
Oh, well, there was a crack.
Yeah.
All right.
There was what?
There was a crack, like a... But.
Yeah, I heard that. It sounded like to me like a cough. Is Kim muted?
I just unmuted it. I was actually muting myself because I did not want to have any interference.
Well, no, Kim, okay. I muted you on the board so you could listen. So what
did
I'm going to do
your
now?
Phone say muted?
I muted my mic so you couldn't hear me. I could hear y'all
right.
Fine. All
right,
yeah,
so what,
also,
what I want to do now.
When he mutes you off the board, you'll hear the voice say muted. The board notifies you that you're muted.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, she's on Skype. I don't know if it does or not.
Yeah, I have a little button, and I can just cut the microphone off, but I can still hear you fine. I just didn't want to input any of the sound.
All right. So what I want to do right now is I'm Dennis, Karen, and me. I'm going to mute the three of us, and Kim, there it is again.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was
I heard
a cool
it.
Voice.
All right.
Yeah, that was.
All right. I'm going to mute all three of us, and Kim, I'm going to leave you live, and don't mute yours. Leave it on.
Okay. All right. I don't know what to say. I mean, the spirit, what are you wanting to tell us? I'm not hearing anything, y'all. I don't think it's here.
One second with that. Is there a reason that you're trying to talk to our show? So, what do you guys think?
Whoa.
Yeah, I heard that.
I definitely
I
just heard that one.
I am freaked out.
I'm going to have to go
absolutely
back to
freaked
this
out.
Stuff and do some voice analysis, some sound analysis on this. This is pretty cool.
Now, that's not the first time I've had it happen while I was on the phone, but I've had my phone on mute a huge portion of the time. So, that just nullifies the mics on my phone, and it wasn't out of my phone. So, like I said, we've got Kim is on Skype. Karen is on. Are you on a regular phone or a cell phone?
Karen?
Make sure she's unmuted.
Karen, are you?
She's unmuted.
Karen.
She.
I think we freaked her out.
Yeah, she's muted.
No, she's not.
Oh,
Well, hold on.
So I'm wondering if we just have network bleed over.
Karen? Hello? Look, let me try this. Is she possessed? I mean,
no.
I want to.
She's saying that you have to unmute her.
She's unmuted. She should be live right now.
She's okay.
All four of us are live. There's the goddamn Karen again.
I caught that one.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know what, and honestly, for everybody listening, just to say that we're not, and excuse my French, but I use this for people who get into the situation, boo fuckers, there may be a possibility that I'm getting feedback off my phone that it's starting, because it seems like every time after I talk that, and if I say Karen, that Karen pops through. There it is. You know what? Dude,
okay.
It's my phone. It's the connection. Oh.
Okay.
Debunked.
I'm here.
Oh, no. Yeah, no. It's my phone being a bitch that is creating the voices.
It's okay.
You think it is?
No, I don't think so.
That sucks.
Hey, Matt, just mute yourself out complete.
I will do.
I just heard yes.
I did too.
You heard it too?
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, hold on. I guess I have to tell you when I'm going muted. So, all right. Right now in 3, 2, 1, I'm going muted.
Okay.
Did I just say good?
I heard it.
Did it say good?
He was saying good that he muted it.
Play it again.
Are you glad that Matt is muted?
Yes.
There. Right there.
Yep, I heard it.
Do you not like Matt?
I heard you, but I can't make it out. Can you say it again slower? Do you like Matt muted? Muted. Whoa.
I heard something, but I can't make it
out. Yeah, I did too. Let me ask you, do you like Karen here? Do you like Karen? Ooh.
I'm going to mute my phone in 3, 2, 1.
I heard voices, but I couldn't make it out.
Yeah, the same thing here.
Yeah. Do you like Karen and Kim here? Do you like us? We're good. And we're fun. I hear talking, but I can't make it out.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
All right. I just want to pop in real quick. Enough with the one-word answers. Answer this question. Do you want us here? Do you not like me? And I'm going to mute it.
I heard the word first.
Dennis, you're live again.
You heard the word first, Matt?
I thought I did, yes. Yes, I thought I did. I heard voices, but I couldn't make it out. It was like all scrambled, but I thought I heard the word first.
Three rows up, what did I type to you, Matt?
Unmute me.
No. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. 6.
Hold
Kimberly,
on.
I'm going to send it to you.
Okay.
Oh, crap. What did I just open up? No, don't print, you jackass. That's what I sent him. What the hell was that?
I just heard that again.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, you know what? I'm Oh,
it sounds like somebody breathing behind.
Now, listen, I breathe heavy. I am a very heavy breather.
All right,
not while you're talking.
It didn't sound like it was from you, though, Karen.
Okay. You know my
breathing. Here's what I'm
going to
do right now.
So.
I'm muting everybody.
Okay. I heard voices, but I couldn't make it out.
No, it's Kim in her Skype.
Okay.
I just figured it out because I brought her live first, and then I heard the...
Yeah.
Like
okay.
I heard...
No, I just had mine muted a minute ago.
It sounded like a male voice to me.
I actually...
Not a female voice.
I just a minute ago, because I was typing, I muted it. I was not on there till just a second ago, for about a minute or
it
so.
Yeah, it sounded like a male voice.
That's what I kept hearing.
And
Karen, I just sent you a friend request under CPR Dennis. Dennis Eslock is my personal. I try to keep the two separated, but they blend so much it doesn't really make a rat's ass anymore.
All right. I want to do one more test, and we have 3 minutes left. So in the next 15 seconds, nobody say a word. Kim, don't type. Like, just let it go for the next 15 seconds.
I didn't hear anything this time, but
no, and I left Kim live, but I didn't tell you that I left Kim live.
Gee, thanks.
And that's
so we
why
can
I told
chuck
you not
your
to...
ass under the bus.
No, that's Kim? That's why I told you not to do anything though.
There it goes again.
That was voices.
Yep. I heard that.
That's not static.
Nope.
And that wasn't when you were turning one of us on or off or anything. That's just...
Nope. Wow, this is so weird. Cool at the same time.
Definitely going to have to go back and listen.
Yep, I heard it.
You know what, Kim? Every time I have you or Chris on, some weird shit happens.
I guess we're just
those sort of people, you know. They like hanging around.
I mean, seriously,
right,
Dennis.
Though, every time.
I'm sorry. At least it makes for an interesting show. Hey,
no shit.
Free entertainment here.
But okay, so in the last like minute that we have, did we not go through every possible option of testing to figure out if it is something weird or something not? And
I just heard something. I heard something while you were talking. Kim, did you hear it?
No. That one.
Okay.
I was
all right.